Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1541, Investing in Climate Solutions with Molly Wood, founder and chief storyteller at Molly Wood Media.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Talking about climate change, that engaging in mitigation of climate change and trying to reduce emissions and invest in, you know, ESG funds, any kind of ESG funding, is woke. There's no meaning attached to that, right? It's just like, and so there has been this war on quote unquote woke investing. There have been laws in multiple states directing pension funds not to invest in categories that are labeled ESG.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. We're discussing the climate economy today and how capitalism, yes, capitalism, can be a tool for driving solutions for a greener planet. Our guest is the one and only Molly Wood, a longtime business and technology journalist turned venture capitalist. She's the founder and chief storyteller at Molly Wood Media, which is an advisory firm for the climate economy. And she's host of Everybody in the Pool podcast and newsletter. Be sure to listen to Everybody in the Pool today, where I'm making an appearance. Molly and I are doing a little bit of a podcast swap today. Molly is a veteran of national media. She worked at Marketplace on National Public Radio, The New York Times, and CNET. And she's a podcasting Hall of Famer. In January 2022, she became a managing director at Launch, scouting and investing in early stage startups with a focus on climate solutions. Today, she brings her behind-the-scenes insights into the moving parts as well as the hurdles for bringing climate solutions to the forefront, the innovations she's excited to see, and why she's ultimately optimistic about the direction of climate action. And what can we all do, our individual contributions to supporting the planet? Here's Molly Wood. Molly Wood, welcome to So Money. It's really finally to have you on the show. How have we not crossed paths until recently?
I honestly don't know. It is so bizarre given our like CNET crossover and just the business and economics focus. Yes. Like I'm surprised that it took someone completely outside of either like the media ecosystem yes. to introduce us, but I'm thrilled.
Mo,
to be here.
if you're listening, Mo, he's our mutual friend and a super connector. Molly's making the heart
heart sign
with your
heart.
Heart you, boo. I want to get into so much with you, Molly. I want to talk about Mollywood Media, which is your media empire, your storytelling around climate solutions, includes a newsletter, podcasts, startup advising, consulting. You have a new podcast. Maybe we could start, though, with just your foray. As I was on your podcast, we did a swap. So everybody go listen to Molly's new podcast. Everybody in the Pool is the name of the show. But you asked me how I kind of got my the origin story. How did you get interested in business reporting of all things?
I know it was a real accident and a winding road to the kind of, it was a slow burn realization that I had been a business reporter for as long as I had in some ways. So I started out as like a very generalist reporter. Like I was doing sports reporting for the Associated Press in Nebraska, that kind of really, you know, old school journalism. And I happened to move to the Bay Area in 1999.
And wow.
We're near the Bay Area in 1999. You ended up in tech, even if you were like a sports reporter from the AP. And so I ended up writing for a magazine that covered the Apple, the company, Mac, you know, Apple as an industry unto itself, went to CNET where I was for 13 years. And then to the New York Times and then Marketplace on NPR. And it was some time in that transition kind of realizing that all of covering tech from 1999 on, you know, we were podcasting about it in 2005. Like it was sort of a building. I think what turned me into an actual business journalist was realizing watching all of those business models change because they were so brand new at the time. It was like, oh, we sell computer components. Oh no, we sell iPhones where everything is totally locked up and you'll never be able to get inside. We sell internet service. We sell cable and internet, right? It was this sort of evolution of those business models, but also building the digital economy in some ways mm-hmm. as I was writing about it. And then of course, Marketplace is like a business and economic show. So that
love
was when
Marketplace.
I really put a ring on that business reporter thing.
Well, they were so lucky to work with you. I and CNET as well. You've worked at a lot of major brands in this space of tech reporting, business reporting, economics reporting, and now the transition to working independently. How has that been? Like when you think about all of these experiences that you've had and what you actually want to take with you and what you want to do differently, what has that been like for you, that exploration?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So after this long career in journalism, I did sort of a pivot into venture capital and became an investor, which was a whole next level of business conversation and business understanding and kind of falling in love with founders and realizing what bananas characters entrepreneurs really are. And then just really had the opportunity to put all of these parts together, the interest in climate solutions, the career in journalism and storytelling really is almost like the reframe, right? It's not just journalism, it's translation. It's this idea, it's what you do on your show, which is take something that seems really complicated and make it so that anyone can understand it. And then this kind of capitalist lens and founder ethos, which I realize I sort of always had at these companies that I worked at. I was always an intrapreneur, like let's invent a show or let's, you know, do three new podcasts. And so I'm the kind of employee who drives bosses crazy. And I think that that has sort of informed this new approach, this sort of independent, not sort of, this completely independent path that I'm now forging that I wouldn't be able to have the confidence to do if it weren't for all of those experiences. Right now, I'm in a position to be able to say, you know what? I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I know what makes a good story. You know, I know what a podcast should sound like. I know what radio sounds like. I know how to write a script. Like, I got this. I'm going to take this opportunity to tell the stories that I want to tell. And P.S., own the things that I create. Not
yes,
for nothing.
Ownership. Mm-hmm. Why haven't we already learned from Oprah?
I don't know.
Because that's what she learned from the men who were in her industry. There was actually a specific person who said to her when she was starting Oprah Winfrey Show that, like, you actually need to own this. Like, this isn't, and then of course her business became called Own, but you know, but yeah, I think, you know what? You're here and you've figured it out and that's all that matters. Your passion now is climate survival, which I heard you say on another podcast. It's like covering vegetables. Mm-hmm. Do you remember you said that? You said I do.
Yes. Unfortunately, that is how many editors see this topic.
Yeah.
They put it in the vegetable category.
Why do you think it's such a slow burn? Why do you think it's such a slow adoption of saying, hey, you know, we should, this is like, it's almost like personal finance. They always bury it. And only till recently, like, lifestyle magazines and the mainstream news has been like, no, this is important. We're going to talk about inflation on the front cover of our news. But climate change, I feel like it's always like a special report.
Right.
Not actually a mainstay.
And it's a special report right around Earth Day.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those topics that feels too big to tackle. Like, one of the ways that I came to this was in just this very, like, I'm from the Northern Plains, right? I grew up in Montana and North Dakota. I am a, like, black coffee and hard work, multi-generational black coffee and hard work person. And so I just had this moment where I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, it's a really big problem. Who's working on it? What are the fixes? Like, what are the solutions to this? Because there must be solutions. And it turns out that if you want to solve a big problem, you break it down into component parts. And then you tackle the parts, right? Like, that's just how you deal with major issues. And frankly, so it was this combination of being, like, fed up with the way that we approach it, but also the realization that this is the biggest business story in the world. Much like personal finance and all of finance affects everyone. Climate is a systemic financial risk. It's the kind of thing that destroys people's homes and health, as you've reported on. It is an investment opportunity. And when you really want there to be lasting change, you need this combination of activism and awareness and economics. Everything is economics. But I think we want climate to be a social conversation. When in fact, first of all, it's a science conversation, but science is also vegetables to editors. But if you want to make it sexy, frankly, attach a crap ton of money to it. And that is not hard to do.
I want to get next to the capitalism behind this and how, you know, we always talk about capitalism in the context of like, oh, capitalism, those cronies, but that this could actually be how our way through this and to survive. But you say, you know, this is the biggest business story. It's also still, unfortunately, a political story. And I wonder, I would love to get your thoughts on how that is muddying the coverage. Or I was learning from you that even some of the financial institutions that are new or the fintech solutions are getting trampled because of politics, because of lobbying, because of threats. This is all happening behind the scenes. A lot of people don't know what's going on. So please tell us what's going on.
Yeah, there is somewhat recently, to such an extent that it almost feels coordinated, there's been, first of all, a strong resurgence of climate denial, specifically on the right. Like, I don't even want to make this a political issue. It's just a simple fact that when you look at who is engaging in climate denial at this point, it is coming from the right almost a plank. Right. You have Ron DeSantis, who recently announced his run for presidency, running in part on a platform of saying that talking about climate change, that engaging in mitigation of climate change and trying to reduce emissions and invest in, you know, ESG funds, any kind of ESG funding is woke. There's no meaning attached to that. right? It's just like, and so there has been this war on quote unquote woke investing. There have been laws in multiple states directing pension funds not to invest in categories that are labeled ESG to such an extent that actually some of those pension funds have turned around and sued in response because they've said, you're preventing us from doing our fiduciary duty to our pension holders. These are actually better investments than, say, fossil fuel stocks, which historically, just, you know, notwithstanding the war in Ukraine, which has given everything a bump in the energy kind of field, notwithstanding that temporary bump, this is a declining asset class, full stop. Like the returns, this is just math. And so you've had some of these pension funds fighting back, but you've also had banks cave to this pressure. Vanguard exited a net zero bank alliance saying we need to be politically neutral. And to me, that suggests, I will say, that the strength of this kind of campaign, which really just appeared out of nowhere in kind of the last year, frankly suggests to me that like it's working on the other side, that the money is really starting to move in the direction of mitigating climate change, and that you have, you know, financial institutions all over the world and regulators saying, yeah, no, this is a systemic risk. The end. There's no debate about this.
Just to take it even a step backwards, how a Ron DeSantis even gets to that kind of a claim, mm-hmm. you have to think about what's fueling his campaign. Where is follow that money?
Right.
So this is all, it is still at the core, this is a money story. This is the biggest financial story that goes uncovered. Enter your podcast. Everybody in the pool, tell us about what you're excited about covering that no one else is really talking about, but is so, so important. This isn't hyperbole when we say that to understand this, to be a part of this conversation, to make any small moves or big moves as a consumer, as a financially minded person, you are not just saving your life, but other lives.
Right. 100%. And you're maintaining a quality of life for yourself and the people around you. And frankly, mm-hmm. you know, somebody sent me a cartoon recently, and it was a comic that showed, you know, a person on stage at a climate conference, and on stage were these bullet points that were, you know, like cleaner air, safer water, like better breathing, quiet,
yes.
you know, highways, like,
if you care about healthcare costs, you should really care about this.
And then there's someone in the audience going, what if it's all a giant hoax and we create a way better world for nothing?
Like, oh my gosh.
Right. On the one hand, there's no downside to having cars on the road that don't pollute. There's no downside to creating hydrogen fueled airplanes that are silent in the skies, that don't send animals like running for shelter when they fly over, or that don't pollute neighborhoods with either sound or exhaust, that actually emit water. Like mm-hmm. that's actually awesome. That's great. I would love to live in that world. And so there's no downside to doing it, even if you're not, even if you're not fully on board with like, oh, we're going to go extinct. Because the thing is, we're not, right? Like everybody wants there to be there's just like, we're doing our status quo or we're all about to die. And the truth is that what we experience is a long, miserable transition. Mm-hmm. And we are already starting to see, I mean, in the global South, they're experiencing it with mega typhoons. We just had a mega typhoon. That's already happening. In India, roads melt. The UK last year had temperatures well over 100 degrees. In London, that does not happen, right? Their mm-hmm. runways of the airport were buckling. And in the Bay Area, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. We had the kind of winter where people were without power for a week, where trees were falling on houses constantly, where you couldn't, those are all, that's just the new normal, and it will only continue to get worse. And so there's this kind of double imperative. One is stop warming the planet so that these mm-hmm. effects don't get worse, and they will kill a lot of people. But before that, they'll cause a lot of people to have to move. They'll cause massive migration. It'll cause damage that we cannot afford. It'll cause mm-hmm. huge disruptions to society, food shortages, energy shortages, insane energy costs. That's the stuff that sort of, those are all the problems. Now, everybody in the pool is not about any of that, because like all we ever talk about are the problems, and then we get super overwhelmed. So everybody in the pool is two things. It's a framework for how to solve problems together. And also it is a show that focuses on the solutions that are like practical, adoptable, real, and business oriented. It's basically marketplace, but for the climate economy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/somoney. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy, you want a bra that's comfortable, you can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Can I confess something to you? Last year, I came home and there was a sign in my front yard that my husband had put because someone had like come to our house and canvassed. And it was a sign that said, climate action now. And I was like, we can't put that in our front yard because we have a house without solar panels. We drive an SUV. Like we're in complete contradiction to this sign. And I think that if I'm getting really honest about it, like I want all these things. I want to be that person that is so climate virtuous. And I feel like it has to be all or nothing. And like until I am like essentially doing all of the quote unquote right things, that I can't claim to be caring about the environment and I can't make statements and I can't even encourage others to either because I'm not modeling it perfectly. And so do you run into that? That I guess it's like a psychological thing, right? That I feel as though I'm not really being as true to the mission as I should be. And I don't know, I guess I'm sometimes I'm lazy about it. Mm-hmm. I'm just human. I'm like just being like honest with you right now.
I know. I'm like, you mean you're like a normal human in a in the world? Yeah, totally. I think that there is so much paralysis in that, and it's self-induced and it's also society-induced, and it's based in this storyline, this thing that I call problem porn, the idea that it's so big that unless you change every single thing, mm-hmm. nothing will possibly work. When we know that if every person just did one thing, we would have a massive impact. And so like the hope with this show is to say, here's a buffet. Here's a buffet of possibilities. And that can be, you know, you install a browser extension on Amazon that gives you a more sustainable version of what you're already going to buy. And then you get that instead. That could be solar panels. Mm-hmm. That could be one of your cars can be an EV. Mm-hmm, like the one that you just use for day to day, you know, or you could take a bike more often, or you could eat a little less meat, or when you think you're going to, right? Like it's all this, I say all the time on the show, like a drop becomes a flood, and it's the collective action. People are always like, I can't do anything as an individual because it's a collective problem. Well, what do you think a collective is made of?
Right.
And then, and your, in our day to day actions, I am not doing all of the things. I am not doing all of the things. I'm going to just confess that because no one person can.
You can't.
And frankly, you shouldn't have to. And we should actually, what I hope, I have this sort of 80-20 theory about it. You know, there's the 80-20 rule, which is like 80% of the inputs drive 20% of the outputs. If 20% of people adopt some solution, then it will become the norm. And then when you go to the store or you go car shopping or you buy a house, you won't have to choose. Right. That'll just be what's there.
I'm curious in your reporting, Molly, have you found that there are these functions, these things that we are told to do for bettering the environment that actually are counter-effective? Like my best friend actually thinks recycling is, she doesn't believe in it.
Yeah.
No. And like when she said that to me, I was like, I don't know if we can be friends anymore. But she's like an educated journalist who has done her research on it. And she's like, no, I feel as though it's counterproductive. You know, it's all going into a big giant pile of waste. I mean, let's be honest. And so I have friends on the other spectrum that are like, if they come to my house and, you know, where's the recycling bin? If I don't have, you know, a different recycling bin for the X, Y, and Z, like I'm a bad person. And so that's one example of like where the verdict may be still out for some consumers on like whether or not that's actually helpful. But do you think that there are some things that we've been sold on that might actually not be the best way to make an impact? If you're going to pick your one thing, should it be recycling?
You should recycle, and recycling is real. And recycling is like a commodities market like anything else. It's a really interesting business story, actually, recycling. Mm-hmm. But there was like this week as we are recording in the first week of June, a whole study came out that said like, yes, curbside recycling really does matter. And it matters to varying degrees based on the price of aluminum, the price of gas, the price of some of the materials in the recycled items. But overall, yes. Like it really matters. And if you have curbside recycling and your city wants to get rid of it, please tell them not to. And, you know, it is in fact impactful. Is it the only thing you should do? Ideally, you might want to layer some stuff on top of that. Maybe what you do actually is like when you're going to go buy a new fleece, you look for one that's made with recycled plastic, because then you help that commodity price stay high. You show, you prove a market. But those things are getting easier to do too. You know, those products are becoming more available. You can choose a little less meat sometimes. You can turn your thermostat down. And there are sort of like easy ways that consumers are being rewarded. You know, if you have a Nest thermostat, for example, you can opt into a program where it'll sort of automatically adjust your temperature based on peak energy usage, and then you get rewards. Are there things we're doing that are counterproductive? Yes, always. You know, I mean, greenwashing is real and it works. I interviewed somebody recently who said that if you just put something in a brown package, then people will buy it thinking it's more sustainable. That sucks. That should stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not ideal that we are transitioning people to electric vehicles that are also huge, like seven-seater SUVs. That's a ton of raw material to make. Because they have huge batteries in them, they're way heavier and more dangerous than other vehicles on the road, and they don't need to be that big. That's like, you know, that's and we're focused on electric vehicles to the exclusion of e-bikes, which are actually a great solution for a phenomenal number of people and safe, energy efficient public transportation. And also, there's like no solution that I'm kicking out of bed for eating crackers right now. Because we need them all.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a unique perch where like point of view where you're at the forefront of a lot of invention and innovation in this space. As you're now wearing your venture capitalist hat, you get to see a lot of the new ideas for using capitalism to drive home solutions. What do you see as the next wave of solutions? And where do you think there's opportunity still to innovate?
I am, I will just tell you, I'm obsessed with mushrooms as a pretty wild climate solution. It turns out that you can use, so this is just like a category that I think is really interesting, but it fits within this larger concept, which is that people call waste to value. There's a lot of stuff that we throw away that it turns out can be transformed into something else. So that's, you know, it's recycling, but it's recycling kind of taken up a notch. And it turns out that mushrooms in use in something called a bioreactor have this magical ability to transform a lot of stuff into other stuff. They can break down toxic waste. They can eat the, like I talked to a company that takes construction waste. They use basically a fungus reaction, mushrooms, to break down and consume the toxins in those materials and then create new building materials that are less toxic and are fully reused. People are using mushrooms to make leather. Mycelium is the like kind of, is the sort of like white web that mushrooms use to communicate. Mushrooms, by the way, freaking fascinating. Don't like them as a food at all, but as a transformational tool.
And maybe they weren't meant to be food.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe
like they were meant to be a widget. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. So people are making fabric out of mycelium, mushroom leather. There's one company I know of that's using food waste and using a mushroom process to turn it into like a gluten-free, super healthy flour for a baking alternative. So I just think that things like that are fascinating. And I just find the mushroom thing really interesting.
And that grows naturally too. So you're not inventing something for the purposes of inventing something else, you know?
Right. Exactly. Like using, so I love everything about that waste, using waste that already exists, using a completely renewable resource, mushrooms, to turn that into something that is equally good or better in a lot of cases is that I think is the great unlock. When we can figure out how to do that in most categories, we will have made some really massive change. And then also we just got to put renewable energy everywhere. Like it's, you know, in some ways we have the magic bullet. It's solar. It's in the sky.
I think I ask everybody this when I'm talking about climate change, those who are in it and experts and have a unique perspective is that, are you optimistic? Because I'll tell you know, listening to like NPR in the morning and my morning drives and you know, if there's like a climate summit, there's inevitably somebody who they interview that's like the world is ending and that is a fact. And the train has left. Whatever we do at this point in the name of protecting the environment, it's too little too late. And I'm just like, should I just run my car into a brick wall now? Like I don't, you know, so... And please like be honest, because I think that what I don't expect you to say either is like, no, it's all going to be fine, you know, because it's like, I think you've already expressed that to an extent, like it's going to be a hard middle until we get to the other side. But when you look at your crystal ball, and how long is it going to take? Is it 50 years? Is it a century until we get to that point where we have made a lot of stride? We have shielded ourselves from the heat.
Yeah, possibly literally shielded ourselves from the heat.
Yeah,
I I hate those stories. Those are again, that's the opposite of what I ever want to do on the podcast, is just say, here's why we're doomed, you know, and or here's this huge insurmountable problem. I will always, I'm a, again, very pragmatic person. And I always want to be honest with people and say, we're going to go through some stuff. There is some stuff that is going to be possibly pretty bad, that is really baked in. But if there is a thing that humans are good at, it's survival. We're phenomenal at that. We have innovated our way out of every, you know, extinction level threat we've ever encountered, whether it was fire, agriculture, the Industrial Revolution, and now reversing the damage of the Industrial Revolution. I am lucky enough to talk to founders and entrepreneurs and inventors every day who are unbelievable. It's actually the most hopeful job in the world, the stuff that people are imagining and building and actually making a reality. And, you know, we talk about how, like, let's just take one example, which is nuclear fusion. So nuclear fission is the energy that we're familiar with now, right? When we think about nuclear energy and bombs. One, more nuclear energy does have to be part of the clean energy mix, but there's also this concept of fusion energy, which is the, what, that's what the sun does. The sun is a giant fusion reactor, and people have been working for decades to try to figure out fusion. And all of a sudden we're getting closer, like pretty legitimately close. Like there's at least one company that's building a power plant stage pilot. Or sized pilot. So they're building a mini power plant to test this fusion energy, which is effectively unlimited energy. And it doesn't, it produces radioactive waste. I don't even know if it's radioactive, but it produces waste, toxic waste that lasts 10 years instead of forever. And you could imagine a scenario where instead of growing up in a like sci-fi dystopia nightmare, our kids actually grow up in an energy utopia. Imagine what problem you could solve with effectively unlimited energy. Like you want to desalinate huge chunks of the ocean to make drinkable water in places where it doesn't rain anymore, but you have unlimited energy, no problem. Like energy is the barrier to preventing us from doing that. And so I am tremendously hopeful that we, you know, and then you take like quantum computing, which is like, oh, okay, so quantum computing can just figure out how to invent new materials, new processes, new kinds of photosynthesis. Like I know this VC firm that talks about literally new processes of photosynthesis. These are the conversations and the real inventions that are happening. So I'm super hopeful. I am super optimistic. And I'm also very realistic about like, it could be pretty tough in some places.
Yeah.
No question.
Are capitalists eager to invest in these ideas?
Yes, and also fickle. Capitalism is a fickle beast, but we have seen a huge boom in private investment in venture capital and also private equity coming into the climate space in the last 3 to 5 years. I don't see that slowing down primarily because, again, you know, in VC, we talk about TAM or total addressable market. This is a this is a total addressable market of the entire planet. Mm-hmm, like it's a big, big opportunity. And I do think, you know, I keep talking about the climate economy. And I think that's what we're in now.
Well, will you come back when you have done even more of an exploration? Like your podcast is now, we are taping in the beginning of June. You're at the beginning of this.
I posted 3 episodes as of today.
Yes. And you can go and listen to me talk to Molly about my reporting on, you know, the cost of climate change and all that I've learned in terms of like the decisions that we make, not just at the grocery store, but where we bank, how we invest, how we life plan through the lens of what is going to be the climate impact, not just only on my life, but the community that I live in. So thank you for the work that you're doing, Molly. And I want to send everybody over to you. Tell us where the show exists and all these. I actually just signed up for your newsletter too. I'm excited for that. Tell us about all the things.
Yeah, the newsletter goes with the podcast. Mollywood.co right now is where you can find it all. By the time I come back, I will have some content at everybodyinthepool.com. I have the domain. I'm getting closer. This is a startup life. But yes, Mollywood.co is the home for everything that I'm doing. And thanks for listening.
Thank you, Molly.
Thanks, Farnoosh.
Thanks to Molly Wood for joining us today. Check out mollywood.co. I'll put that link in our show notes to sign up for her newsletter. And be sure to subscribe to Everybody in the Pool, Molly's fantastic podcast about climate solutions and the people who are building them. See you back here on Friday for Ask Farnoosh. I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.